I still have to remind myself every day, like, I still mourn the loss of my political career. Like, I still feel jealous of friends of mine that are mostly childless, that are in the White House, that are on presidential campaigns, like, that are doing the jobs that I wish I could have done, but I had kids before I could do them. It still hurts.
Welcome back to the Big Time Adulting Podcast. Today, we are talking about the dance between motherhood, career, success, loss. Emily Tisch Sussman is here, the creator and host of award-winning podcast She Pivots, a Tony-nominated producer, a Mary Claire contributor, a Democratic political strategist, a musical theater lover, and mother of three. Say hi.
Hey, Caitlin. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. Just quickly rewind back to your love of musical theater. Do you sing?
Not in a way that others would want to hear, but in a way that brings me joy.
So kind of like me.
Yeah, I feel like my version of singing is like your version of dancing. Like, I love karaoke, and I like to say that what I lack in talent, I make up for in enthusiasm.
Do you have a go-to karaoke song? Because it's kind of an important thing to have.
Yeah, it is really important. This may surprise you, but I have sort of a low voice. So
oh, okay.
I like to find songs in my register. Yeah. So Manic Monday is always a go-to.
Oh, my go-to karaoke song is Ave Maria, because why not? You know, just like a classic opera tune, and just get up there
really
and
gets
belt
the bar
it
going.
Out. Yeah, it really does. People's just juices are pumping. All right. So I'm glad that we got that out of the way. I won't ask you to sing. I was going to ask you to sing if you were like a real singer.
No, I'm not a real singer, but I will tell you that for my 40th birthday, I basically designed the entire party around me surprising every single guest and coming out with a full performance.
Stop it.
Yeah, I took voice lessons for months, and I had like five professional dancers behind me. I had real costumes, and I did a four-song medley.
Wait a second. This is a little bit more than you just led on to. Like, you were taking voice. You can sing a little bit then.
I don't know that every... I would say I put it on. Like, I found some nice low songs, really gave it the attitude, the sparkle. It did a lot.
That is amazing. Today's episode is sponsored by Primal Kitchen. Thank you, Primal Kitchen, for your wonderful products and the integrity of the ingredients used in them. I love to spill your sauces all over any protein I can get my hands on and use your ranch and ketchup as a vehicle to get my children to eat their vegetables. We thank you. You can get Primal Kitchen products at pretty much any of your local grocery stores and use Big Time Adulting as a code for 20% off an entire order at primalkitchen.com. Now back to the show. So I do have some serious questions to ask you, believe it or not. And I think I want to start with when you first kind of realized that motherhood was going to deeply change your life and your relationship to work.
Well, I was really resistant to it. I didn't know that if I wanted kids at all. I just didn't think about it. Like, I got married and went off birth control because I thought
that was the thing to do.
Yeah, it's like what I was supposed to do. And like, it took everyone like a year. So I figured like, okay, I have a year to get my mind around this. And I got pregnant like in the first month. And I was sick immediately. So it wasn't even motherhood. It was being super sick. Like, I was so self-conscious about people thinking that I wasn't as hard a worker or as good a worker as I had always had been, that I kept my pregnancy secret for as long as I possibly could. And I actually did that with the first two. So I was working as a political strategist. I'm a lawyer by training. And I worked as a political strategist in the largest Democratic think tank in Washington. I worked on federal policy and I designed campaigns. So it was really fast moving. And I couldn't keep up. Like, I had my first two kids within 18 months. Mm. And it was also the beginning of the Trump presidency, which if you work at a Democratic think tank is a big change in your work. And I ended up not going back to my office at the end of my second maternity leave. It's when I left the think tank. And it wasn't because I wanted to spend more time with my kids. I actually felt basically no connection to the babies. I thought they were so annoying and such a drain on me. But I was so self-conscious about the fact that everyone I worked with knew me as a worker before I had kids.
Mm.
And so that's how they were going to be measuring me. And I was like, I can't do this. Like, I can't show up in the same way because my identity was so tied to being really good at being a political strategist and working the hardest of anyone in the room. So I wasn't the same person and I couldn't show up in the same way and I didn't have the same bandwidth. So it changed for me really quickly.
And did you feel angry or sad about that shift that you made?
I don't even think I had space to feel sad. I was mostly just angry. I was angry at my kids. I was really angry at myself. I thought, like, I'm this badass worker and all of these people seem to be doing work-life balance. And it was like the lean-in era when everyone's walking around with, like, their kids breastfeeding from them on the stage. And I was like, that should be me. But, like, this kid is so annoying and I want to be free.
Mm-hmm.
So I was mostly angry at myself. I was angry at my kids. I was worried that nobody would work with me as a freelance person because I didn't have this affiliation, like this backing of this think tank behind me. I was really self-conscious about that. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up taking so much work as a freelance consultant because I was like, oh my God, they're willing to work with me. Like they're validating me, that I ended up working basically the same hours, but sitting at the bottom of my closet instead of working in an office for the first year. And that wasn't particularly sustainable either.
Do you think that other people actually judged you for leaving?
Yeah. I mean, it's probably legitimate. I certainly judged women who had kids ahead of me, like before me. Like I definitely judged them. Mm-hmm. I was like, we're at the center of the action. Why would you ever lean out of that? Like we worked so hard to get here. I think there is a part of that that was real. When I went to the president of our think tank to tell her that I wasn't coming back, she said quickly, like, oh, is it to spend more time with your kids? And I was like, no, absolutely not. Like, I do not want you to think that of me. And she was kind of giving me space to be able to say it, but I couldn't say it.
I wanted to say, actually, in 2022, you wrote an article titled, My Children Killed My Career, but Took Me in an Unexpected New Direction. So how did your family, colleagues react to that? Did it feel like you were the only one saying that sort of thing out loud, that was harsh or aggressive in your word choice, but meaningful?
Yeah, and it took some editors to work with me because those were my words. Like that is the words that I wanted to use. And they're like, oh, but isn't it kind of harsh? And is it kind of scary? And I was like, well, that's how I feel. And by the way, you may hear my dog barking right now. I definitely got a really strong reaction, definitely from other people in my field that worked in politics, that nobody felt like we're not allowed to show weakness. Mm-hmm. If we show that we're not the same worker, then we won't get hired. So I got a very strong reaction from people saying, I mean, kind of, I can't believe you did this. Like, you're kind of acknowledging that you're now dead. So, like, good luck. You know, saying the quiet part out loud, they did feel like their career had to be take a back seat. And I don't know another field. Like, this is the only field that I know, is the only field that I can speak to. So what did surprise me was women from really every field felt a connection to the article and felt like my kids really did ruin my career. And I felt embarrassed to be able to say that. And I've gotten other things from it. Like, I really do feel a genuine connection with each of my children very differently from one another. My children are very different and I have a different connection with each of them. And I genuinely do enjoy it. So I have, like, now I feel okay saying that I didn't enjoy the baby phase because I felt so guilty at the time. And I was like, oh, they ruined my career. Shouldn't I be like loving this? Isn't everyone like trying to get to this? By the time I got to the third kid, I would say to her, I was like, don't try and get my attention. When you hit two, then I'm interested. Then you've earned it.
You must have known something in the back of your mind, must have known that this was for like a greater purpose for you down the line, that you would eventually enjoy these children that you were creating and the moments that you would be having with them later.
I really didn't, to be honest. It was like a real, I'm incredibly fertile, it turns out.
Oh, okay. It was just like, boop, pregnant again, you sneeze.
Yeah. Like I cried all three times because I was like, I can't go back into it. And they're so close in age that I had like very little proof point that I would mm-hmm. eventually enjoy them when I kept getting pregnant. I was like, I don't yet. And I honestly really, I doubted myself every time. Like, I doubted whether I could do it. Like, mm-hmm. I wasn't sure I could even keep them alive. Like, I didn't know what I was doing. I wasn't sure if I would ever emotionally connect to them. I felt very guilty about that. I wasn't sure I knew how to, like, I was so scared that I couldn't read a parenting book. Like, I couldn't listen to anything. Like, I talked to Emily Oster and she was like, my research came from a place of like me not knowing how to be a parent. So I researched and I was like, that is so funny. My response was the opposite, to shut down and be like, well, I can design a campaign. So maybe I can raise a child. Like, that feels harder. I don't know. But no, I really didn't know. And it was really, really scary. And even 2 years ago when I wrote that article, my youngest was still really young and I wasn't totally sure I was going to be able to
stand behind it.
Yeah, I wrote it because, like, coming from this place of feeling like I need to work and move the needle on something. Like, I always thought of my career in terms of legislative change. Like, I change laws. That's what I do. I don't change culture. And now, like, now legislative change is out of my reach. I can no longer change laws. That part of my career is no longer available to me. So now I think about it as culture change, by having these conversations with women who have changed their lives for a personal reason, not a professional reason. But the whole thing really stems from the fact, like, I keep, like, it's because I need it. Like, I need to keep hearing that it's going to be okay. That's more the leap of faith that I took, that it was going to be impactful in some way by, like, showing everyone the most vulnerable part and insecure part of myself. But it wasn't really a leap of faith that I would eventually connect with the kids. I didn't know that I would. And that was really scary.
So you grew up in a family where, you know, like a very prominent, high-profile family, the Tisch family, where the pressure of, you know, maybe finding passion and success were high. Can you talk a little bit more about that and maybe how that might have contributed to the pressure that you felt as a working mom?
Yeah, very much so. I'd say, you know, my family was well-known in New York, where I grew up, and I'd say it was the single defining factor for me that I was always worried that people were judging me against my family, didn't really get to know me. It would happen to me all the time. People would say, oh, I know the Tishes. And I was like, okay, well, I don't know you. So this mm-hmm. is an awkward exchange.
Like, oh, you do? Do you? What's my favorite color?
Yeah, literally. Like, it was kind of like I didn't matter as a person. Like, I was just that I was like part of this family. But it did feel like the stakes were very high and I wasn't sure that I could measure up. I was very rebellious when I was like young and a teenager. And I think it's because I wasn't sure that I was going to be successful. Like, I didn't feel like a successful person. I had a lot of self-doubt. So if I could just tap out, that was easier than having to compete and feel like I knew that I was going to be able to produce at the level that my family was at and expected to be. I think it's a big part of why I moved to Washington, so that I could leave New York and I could really define my own career path, define myself in a place that nobody in my family was. And I do think that I accomplished that, to be honest. Like, I was very accomplished in my field and I did the things that were the hardest. I always ran towards the things that are the hardest. I think part of it is just my personality, but also part of it is because I knew that nobody could say that I didn't earn it. But it made it extra hard when I was failing at my job, because now I just had no identity. Like, if I wasn't the hardworking political strategist, then am I just the sort of floundering member of my family who didn't accomplish enough?
There's so much wrapped up in all of it for all of us too. You know, like, I think every woman who becomes a mother who has experienced a feeling of loss, right? Like, it's just a completely different experience than we all sort of imagine and envision that it's going to be.
It's totally different. I mean, I still have to remind myself every day, like, I still mourn the loss of my political career. Like, I still feel jealous of friends of mine that are mostly childless, that are in the White House, that are on presidential campaigns, like, that are doing the jobs that I wish I could have done, but I had kids before I could do them. It still hurts. Like, I still wish I could do it. And then I have to stop myself and say, but I have a different life now and it's okay.
What is your parenting style? How would you categorize yourself as a mom, as a parent?
That I treat my children like little adults.
Mm-hmm.
I have no baby voice. I expect them to work things out and rise to my level.
And do you find that they are more independent capable, realistic little humans because of that? Or what do you think?
I mean, I feel like that is giving myself a lot of credit, but I do kind of think they're pretty independent. Like, I do expect them to do things for themselves, and they do it. Like, I am kind of strict. I'd say the upside of having three is that with one, I gave him way too much attention. Probably even the same with two. With three, there's always somebody acting correctly. So that child gets my attention, the one who is acting correctly, and let the other ones fight it out.
I find that kids actually really like to be talked to in a real adult type of voice because they are really, really adept at sensing bullshit. And they don't really like to be talked to down, you know, like they want to be, give it to me straight. Like, I get it. They want, because they need to know what's real, what's happening. You know, I think kids actually really thrive in an environment where they feel like they're being told what is going to happen. You know, it's this is what to expect. And there's security in that. So I agree with the sort of straight talk.
Yeah, and they rise to the occasion. I mean, just before the break, our school has chickens, and so they got a new delivery of chickens, like baby chicks. I don't know if anyone knows this, but they send you live chickens in the mail. That's how chickens arrive.
In a box with like holes in it or something?
Literally. But like not every chick makes it. That is part of the process.
Yeah.
And so our principal was very stressed about the kids seeing the chicks that didn't make it. And I was like, no. They should see the chicks that don't make it. They have no emotional attachment to these chickens. It's not a grandparent. Like, they should learn about death and life. And so my 7-year-old son ended up being the one, I think probably I was the only one volunteering their child for this. But like, my son dug the graves for these baby chicks and like did the burial for them. Because I was like, get them in the mix there.
Let's get morbid. Let's just do this right now. Rip off the Band-Aid.
Let's start talking about death. Like, it's going to be part of life. And so we should talk about it.
You know who does a fucking great job of that is Disney, because everybody does somebody. Tearjerkers.
Every movie. It's so much. So much.
I want to talk about your podcast a little bit. I'm very intrigued by the topic of the podcast, which is, you know, how we now as women, you talk to women. Typically, you've interviewed a lot of very influential women, some celebrities and political leaders. How we define our success and how we become at ease with redefining success in a society that has outlined it to mean sort of one or two things.
Yeah, that's such a big piece for me. You know, I do think that now if legislative change is not what I'm doing right now, then it's culture change. And it's this piece in particular of how our personal lives and our personal decisions impact our professional decisions. And the idea that you can be successful, and yes, we are redefining success, but a success because of these personal things, not in spite of them. Like, I think we all had these ideas about how to like paper over our resumes of like, I took a break or I took care of a sick parent or this like life event happened and we came up with narratives for it. But we should be able to, whether it's walking into an interview or creating something or working with someone, to be able to say, I went through these things and this is what I've learned and now I'm better because of it. Like, I think every mom out there can say, I'm a better time manager. I'm a better multitasker. I know how to cut out bullshit.
Do you think, though, that the reason why we gloss over these things or pretend like they're not happening, motherhood, for instance, in a corporate sense, in a career sense, is because it is not considered successful or a measurement of great value in today's society? And how do we reconfigure that so that women can be, I mean, we're fucking amazing at doing all of the things that we do.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I think it is not still valued. But what I'm hoping is that if we open up the conversation, and I actually think podcasting has been a really good medium for doing it, because we can actually have deep conversations and we can talk about all the nuance and we can hear the pride in somebody's voice when they talk about being the primary parent and getting three kids ready every day out the door into school. That takes time management. That takes multitasking. That takes a hell of a lot of patience when you're tired. Mm-hmm. Like, those are skills. And those are things that are translatable into a workplace or not into a workplace, if you want it to be translatable into somewhere else that brings value.
Or just into your home. Like, as a primary caretaker all of the time, it's an incredibly demanding and difficult role to fill every day.
Yeah.
It's harder than any job I've done.
For sure. And so being able to identify for ourselves and then articulate to someone else the skills that we have honed and be able to see that they can go into other contexts is huge. Like, these are real things. These are things that have value. And so this is what's driven me to create the show this way, is to have these conversations. Like, it stemmed out of the fact that I had 3 kids in 3 years and therefore my career was dead and needed to find a new identity. But I actually primarily don't interview people who have similar stories to me. This idea applies to everyone. Like, it could be something, you know, we have Holocaust survivors on the show. We have people who have taken care of parents. We have people who have transitioned. You know, like, it's anything that you've gone through that has fundamentally changed your perspective, and then figured out how to take those skills and how to take that perspective, build on the experience you've had, and build something entirely new and entirely different. So it's pulling out those more extreme stories and then putting them on the show, I hope is part of moving culture. Because then if we see an extreme version, we're like, oh, well, I can do it too.
And how would you say that you've redefined your own version of success as what you saw it prior to becoming a mother and now as what you're doing?
I mean, the biggest way I define my success right now is, am I controlling my time? And am I doing something that feels meaningful to me?
Mm-hmm.
The way I defined my success was career, size of my team, compensation, title, access to power. Like, those were very clear markers of how I defined my success before. And none of those things are accessible to me right now. So, you know, now my definition of success is that I feel like I can have conversations that feel meaningful. And then at the end of this, I forgot my daughter's bedding for nursery school. I will drive to school and drop it off for her. I serve on the school board now. So that's defining success for me.
And sometimes these, like, seemingly lower level shifts are actually moving the needle more than what's going on at the top.
Well, that's very true. I mean, one person can have a huge impact in small communities. People are observing what you do more than you think. So, you know, if you're passionate about something and, like, you really put your time into something and really take it seriously, it will inspire a lot of other people. Mm-hmm. And but also, I will speak out of the other side of my mouth and say that actually everyone only thinks about themselves and nobody is thinking about anyone else any of the time. And so like, there's no need to really be self-conscious about doing it wrong because people are only thinking about themselves all the time.
Unless it's your children, and then you're thinking about them all the time.
Right, you're thinking about them, and they are also only thinking about themselves all of the time.
Well, yeah, their frontal lobes are not quite there yet to
exactly
think about anything else. Well, this has been a great conversation. Before I let you go, I always have to ask everybody, what's your favorite snack?
Seaweed. Dried seaweed.
Seaweed. My daughter loves seaweed. You go for flavored or just
no
sea salted, whatever.
Yeah.
Raw dog.
Yeah, ooh. Raw dog. That's seaweed.
See, I like the teriyaki flavor.
It's good. It's too salty for me.
Too salty for you.
You know, yeah. I did a real salt detox a couple of years ago, and I've kept the salt mostly out of my diet. My husband says that I just eat bland, tasteless food.
Why with the salt detox?
Well, this has also been another part of my journey is that I gained a lot of weight with my kids. I gained about 150 pounds and kept it on for basically the entire time that I was pregnant. And so during the pandemic, when everybody was sitting at home gaining weight, I was like, if I don't come out of this thing looking like my old self again, I'm gonna fucking go out of my mind. And I didn't have a job. So I was like, well, I might as well just get my health back on track. And I had a lot of health problems, like, because I had gained so much weight and my kids were starting to get older. I couldn't play with them. I couldn't pick them up in the same way. So mm-hmm. I actually went to a health clinic for 2 weeks that was designed for people who were had heart problems and severely overweight, and it was this, like, 1970s style diet, which is very out of fad right now.
Isn't that just like white wine and cocaine or something, the 70s style diet? I think salt fits
and
in
that it. Worked, it turns out. But I've basically stayed on it ever since. Like, it really resonated with me. Like, it really worked for me. And so I've basically stayed on it ever since. And I have a much cleaner diet and much healthier. But so
that's awesome.
Yeah.
And good for you for taking the 2 weeks, by the way, because that's also hard to do, to go.
It was so hard. I mean, it took me months to get over the mental block of the fact that I was leaving my children, the fact that I was leaving my husband in charge. It was also like really acknowledging that this is like really a problem and that I need to take my health. I need to treat it seriously. I had always had this mental block that if I took the amount of effort it would take to get healthy again, then other people would think that I'm not as serious about my job because I was taking so much time and energy into it. And it was only because I had basically lost everything professionally and the pandemic that I was able to really do it. And I'm so happy that I did now. I mean, now I feel like myself again. Like, I feel like in a way that I never thought I would be able to as a post-pregnant person.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's not easy to do. And there's just so much stress. I mean, to have kids in the time span that you did and stuff, it's almost like having had multiples.
Yeah. Like, it's like crabs in a barrel. Like, they're just like never stopping. Like, no one's ever doing the same thing at the same time.
That's so funny. It's a good analogy. Yeah. Well, thanks so much for coming today. The work that you're doing with She Pivots, I think it's such an important conversation to have around women and redefining success and how we define our success. Thanks for coming, Emily. I'll talk to you soon.
Talk soon.
Thank you so much for listening. If the show tickled you, inspired you, share it with a friend. And please rate and review us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, because it's actually really helpful to me. And if you want to share your big time adulting moment or be a guest on our show, please write to me at bigtimeadultingpodcast@gmail.com. And subscribe to my magazine, Soul Snacks, where I curate everything you need to know into a tiny, neat little space. Now get yourself a snack.